You're listening to episode number 69 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
Okay, welcome. Episode number 69 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, the only podcast on the internet that makes real science real simple. And as you always know, you can find the website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, and the episode show notes receptacle at tailwind-coaching.com. And that's where you can also find my online training plan store, where you can get complete training solutions for all your major season goals, grand fondos, rides, races, and general fitness. While you're there, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support. That'll help you get a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost you. Basically, the concept here, you buy an off-the-shelf plan from my downloadable store. You add the training plan support to your shopping cart, and I coach you through the downloadable training plan of your choice, and I help you adapt it to your goals, fit it around your schedule, and help you change it as necessary to get around the little things in life that get in your way. And that costs you about $30 a month with a sliding scale. The longer you buy, the cheaper it gets. Of course, podcast show notes for this particular episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast are at tailwind-coaching.com/69. Now, while you're checking out those podcast show notes, do not forget to sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter. If you want a direct link for that, head on over to tailwind-coaching.com/signup. And don't forget, you can share that with your friends. That'll get you free coaching advice, workouts, fitness information, and special offers all delivered to your inbox. And of course, just for signing up, you get a free 1 month of training plans from me, just to help you, help show you what a good training plan can do for you. Don't forget, if you're listening to this on iTunes, or if you're not listening to this on iTunes, head on over there and rate the podcast 5 stars if you like what you hear. It really helps me move up those podcasting ranks, and the further up those ranks I get, the more people I get to reach, and the more people I reach, the more people I get to help enjoy riding their bike. Coaching is a labor of love. And of course, doing this podcast is a labor of love. I don't make any money off this particular podcast, and I do it for free so that I can help you guys out. And I love watching people ride their bikes and have fun doing it. And of course, the faster you ride, you know, generally, the more fun you can have. But I digress. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, you can contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com, or you can follow me on any kind of social media. You can follow me on Strava, on my RSS feed. You can find me on Stitcher, on Podbean. Of course, you can email me. You can find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, facebook.com/tailwindcoaching, and at Coach Rob DC on Twitter as well. And just a quick note that the sponsor for this particular episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast is, once again, Stages Cycling, the creator of the left-sided Stages Power Meter, which, of course, I do use on a number of my bikes. Go ahead, check it out. There's a link in the episode show notes. And anything you purchase from Stages, if you're in the market for a power meter, I encourage you to click through that link. And if you do purchase, they throw a few dollars my way as a referral fee. And that helps to keep the podcast free. Bandwidth, hosting, that kind of stuff does cost money, folks. And every little bit helps, so if you're in the market for a power meter, don't forget about that link. And of course, for those of you who are loyal listeners to the podcast, head on over to the show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/69. And at the end of the show notes, you will find a discount code for anything in my online training plan store, as always. So, what do we got today? Well, if you looked at the episode title, either on iTunes or on the website, wherever you're listening, you're going to see something about periodization versus reverse periodization. This was a topic that really came up after one of my last podcasts, a couple of my last podcasts, and a couple of my last posts on the website, actually, where I had mentioned some information about periodization and reverse periodization, and how reverse periodization could be a little bit of a solution for people who are looking to change up their training or their fitness. And the post in question here was why cyclists do not need traditional base training. And you can find that. I'll put a link in the show notes, but tailwind-coaching.com/68 would be the number for that. And you can read through that. But interestingly enough, that particular post generated a lot of chatter. Let's put it that way. I got a number of questions emailed to me, and people were very, very curious because I only mentioned a short bit about reverse periodization and why that would be a beneficial way to alter up your base training. In this particular podcast episode, we're going to go into exactly what periodization is, what reverse periodization is, and how you can use both of them or either of them to really hit your fitness goals. All right, to really properly explain this and really get in depth in it, the main thing I need to talk about first, I need to describe what exactly is periodization. Periodization essentially is a method of training or a form of training that's been in use since the mid-1950s in pretty much every sport that's out there. And it's essentially based on Selye's general adaptation syndrome, or GAS for short. And that particular model, the general adaptation syndrome model, essentially describes about how the body adapts and changes to different stimuli that are placed upon it. And it basically explains how your body is basically set off by something. There's a stimulus that causes your body to react. And once it reacts, it begins to adapt and it begins to change itself so that it can be more efficient, it can be more fit, it can be a little bit better at doing the thing that actually set off that adaptation in the first place. All right, and the phases of that I'm going to go through in depth on the website and the show notes here, but for completeness sake, you can take a look at that and I'll let you go through here. It's interesting that these phases of the general adaptation syndrome really correlate to different phases of your training, and training stimulus, training recovery, and training adaptation. So what are we talking about here? Well, we're going through the alarm phase. The alarm phase is basically the stimulus or the input that causes your body to react, causes your body to say, dude, what's going on here? I just got put in this situation where I have to work really hard to do something, whether it's I'm being chased by an animal that wants to eat me, whether, my boss just yelled at me and I better step up my work a little bit more, or whether I'm out on the bike and I just was asked to do a 10 mile time trial. Okay, that is a stimulus or an alarm to your body. Once that alarm occurs, once that stimulus occurs, your body moves into a state of resistance. And that state of resistance is essentially the part where your body begins to adapt to that training phase or that training stimulus or that alarm stimulus. It doesn't have to be even a training stimulus or anything of that nature. It can be any kind of stimulus in your daily life. But for our purposes, obviously, we're going to talk about training stimulus since it is a, coaching training podcast. So we have the alarm. We have the stimulus that causes your body to sit up and take notice and say, geez, I just got asked to do this. Now you have the resistance phase or the adaptation or recovery phase of this. And the recovery adaptation phase or resistance phase is basically the part where your body says, well, if I had to do a 10-mile time trial today, I might have to do a 10-mile time trial tomorrow too. So I better step up my game and I better get my crap together and I better start building some more fitness so that I can do that again and do it a little easier. Because essentially your body does not know the difference between being chased by a large, hungry animal and doing a 10-mile time trial. For all your body knows, that 10-mile time trial was you getting away from a hungry lion that wanted to eat you. You get what I'm saying here? You following? So your body's trying to make you better at it. That's the pure, I hate using the word primal, but it's the sort of the evolutionary reason for training adaptation or physiological adaptation. All right. And the third stage of the general adaptation syndrome would be exhaustion. This is the overtraining type scenario here, where your body simply cannot adapt any further and your body just begins to break down. This is the guy who will train high intensity work for 5 days a week for 6 weeks and then wonder why they suddenly feel like they just got blown out the back of a cannon. It's also the kind of situation where you're under prolonged stress and your body just begins to break down. Your immune system breaks down. You get tired. You get sick. It's your body's way of telling you it's time to back off a little bit. So the alarm phase, the resistance phase, the exhaustion phase. How do these play into periodization? Well, periodization at its core is simply a concept of systematically modulating periods of hard, intense work with periods of rest. And we divide that into cycles or blocks, depending on how you want to see it. And periodization essentially can be summarized by saying the closer you get to your goal, the more likely or the more like your goal the training becomes. I'm going to repeat that one more time. Periodization is essentially summarized by the statement, the closer you get to your goal, the more like your goal the training becomes. You follow? So for example, if your goal is to race criteriums, as you get closer and closer to your race days, your training should get more like a crit. Your training intervals, your work should look more like an actual criterium than a long, slow distance ride. If a Grand Fondo or a Century is your goal, as you get closer and closer and closer to that goal, your training should get more like a Grand Fondo or a Century. You should be doing longer rides up near that 60, 70, 80 miles, that 3, 4, 5 hours to acclimate your body to the stimulus that you're going to be putting it through. The other interesting part of periodization that's worth noting here is that training needs to be very, very specifically metered out in order to prevent your body from hitting that exhaustion phase of the GAS syndrome or the GAS paradigm, that general adaptation syndrome. That's the overtraining phase, that exhaustion phase. You have to properly dose your training. And in order to do that, many, many people, many, many coaches will break down all these different stimuli. Since there are multitudes of different stimuli you can train as a cyclist, many coaches will break this stimuli down into a different number of different cycles. Okay? And now there are multiple cycles of periodization, and we're going to go through each one of them in turn. So the macro cycle. This is your annual training cycle, your entire training season, whether it's 6 months, whether it's 8 months, whether it's 12 months. All right. It is an annual plan and it's working towards your main competition of the year. That is a very, very key point. Your number one competition of the year is the end goal of that macro cycle. Your entire macro cycle is designed to take you to that A goal, that A race, that A Grand Fondo, that A group ride, that A level thing that you must perform in. Your macro cycle is designed to take you there and help you perform. And after that, it's all cake. The macro cycle itself is usually broken down into a number of different phases. And actually, if you really want to go by the book, you can talk, there's 6 different phases, and they are, number 1, the preparatory phase, or the prep phase. Usually, 2 to 4 microcycles, which we'll get to in just a minute, traditionally including weight training, core stability, core function work, functional motion work, functional movement, flexibility, mobility, and such and such and so forth. This prep phase, these microcycles are generally low intensity, low volume. All right, so these are not very difficult at all. These are basically getting you ready to train. All right, and then you move into the base phase. Number two, the base phase. I talked a lot about this in my last podcast, tailwind-coaching/68, if you really want to get some more interesting information about that. The base phase is essentially used to establish those basic cycling skills and abilities, and will usually last between 8 and 12 microcycles, depending on the length of your season and depending on when you start training, when your goals are, such and such and so forth. Traditionally, now again, traditionally, this is not typically the way I see it, but traditionally, your base phase will include lots of zone 2 endurance work, some neuromuscular conditioning as well. Again, low intensity work, high volume of work. So where in prep, you might be spending 3 to 4 hours a week. In a base phase, you're probably going to be spending between 10 and 15 hours a week, traditionally. The third phase would be the build phase. And again, usually 8 to 10 microcycles in length. And traditionally, this is used to build some more race-specific fitness, which will include some VO2 max type work, some high-intensity work, zone 5, zone 6, zone 7 type stuff. This is a generally higher intensity, lower volume pattern. So the higher the intensity, the lower the volume, you maintain a similar workload by seesawing those two around. The fourth phase would be your peak phase. 1 to 2 microcycles. This increases rest significantly, and again, significantly increases the specificity of training. If you're a crit racer, you're going to be doing crit-specific intervals. If you're a Gran Fondo rider, you're going to be doing some longer intervals, some endurance, some intensity endurance type intervals. Very, very high intensity stuff, very low volume for the most part. For a Gran Fondo rider, a traditional peak, you may actually only be riding one day that week, and it might be a long ride, getting your training stress in and shutting down until your event. For a crit racer, you might be riding 3-4 days a week, maybe 15 to 20 to 30 minutes at a time, just really super high intensity, and then out. The fifth phase, race. Generally one microcycle. It's a rest and taper and a preparing to race. Very minimal volume, very minimal intensity, designed to really just sharpen your fitness a little bit, but continue to taper off. And the final, sixth phase is the transition phase. Again, variable duration, could be 2 microcycles, could be 10 microcycles. Generally, traditionally, it's considered to be up to 8. And the idea here is rest, recover, forget about what you just did. Now, a lot of you are probably asking, okay, macrocycle is, but what's a microcycle? What's microcycle? I'm going to get to that in one more second. But in between the macro and the micro, there's something called a mesocycle. The mesocycle itself is a subunit of that macrocycle. And generally, each mesocycle is about 20 to 25% of the total macrocycle. So if your macrocycle is a year, you know, that's your season is 1 year. Each mesocycle may be 3 months, or it may be 2 months, or it may be 4 months. Mesocycle is generally made up of anywhere between 2 and 6 weeks or microcycles. Here's where we get to the microcycle point. A microcycle is the smallest unit breakdown of a periodization type schedule and is generally a week in duration. And it's mainly a week in duration because of the difficulty of building a microcycle outside of a calendar week. I've seen people do them in 10-day blocks, but if you have an odd-numbered month, a 10-day block doesn't necessarily work. So a microcycle is generally a single week, a calendar week. So it's a 7-day period. All right? That's a lot of information on the cycles of periodization. But the take home here, and again, I summarize this in the show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/69. The take home here is you have a macro cycle, which is broken down into mesocycles, which contain a number of microcycles. And within all of those headings or subheadings, you have different phases: the prep, the base, the build, peak, race, and transition phases. All right. And again, that traditional periodization paradigm, what people talk about when they talk about a periodized training plan, they're talking about a paradigm where you start with a high volume, lower intensity plan, and you move towards a high intensity, low volume plan. That generally means that you sacrifice volume for intensity as the season progresses. And the reason behind this is, again, the theory: if you do not moderate your volume and your intensity, at some point during the season, you will exceed your body's ability to adapt. You will exceed your body's ability, all right, to stay within that resistance phase, and you're going to push it into that exhaustion phase. All right. You will start to overtrain. Your body will start to break down. You'll get sick. You'll get tired. And you just won't perform. So, how does reverse periodization, what I mentioned in my last podcast that started all of this, how does reverse periodization actually differ from that traditional periodization model? If you're talking about reverse periodization, you're assuming, well, if periodization is high volume, low intensity, moving towards high intensity, low volume, isn't it just exactly the reverse of that? Well, yes and no. You need to remember that training stimulus is not just about intensity and volume. Okay, there is a lot more to it. And reverse periodization really is no different. There's no such thing as only intensity and volume. All right, if you're going to build a plan solely based on intensity and volume, I can pretty much guarantee you from a lot of years of experience, you are going to end up A, sorely disappointed in the results you actually achieve, or B, you are going to drive yourself so far into the ground, you're going to get up one morning, you're going to go, you know what? Well, here goes my clean rating on iTunes. You're going to get up one morning and go, you know what? Fuck this shit. I don't want any part of this bike anymore. Mic drop. I apologize for that, but you know what? I've seen it happen. It's happened to me. I've watched it happen to my teammates. I've watched it happen to my friends. I've watched it happen to my clients. It happens, and it's almost an overnight transition. I hate to tell you that. If you really want to consider a training plan that is based nothing more on intensity and volume, that's where you're going to end up. Reverse periodization is essentially not just intensity or volume, but how you apply that intensity and that volume. It's not about doing less work in the base phase compared to regular type of periodization. It's not about doing more intensity in the base phase compared to different kinds of periodization. It's really about doing different kinds of work during each phase. And one of the ways to evaluate the work that you're doing is by using training stress score, or TSS, to evaluate those training loads. And you can sort of modulate your training based on that TSS, based on your TSS scores. Now, again, remember, this is a key point. Reverse periodization tends, and I only say tends because it can go either way, but I have seen the most success with it when using it to work towards goals that are longer duration events. Grand Fondos, centuries, longer road races. Okay, it can be tailored to any kind of specific goal. It's just a little bit more difficult to do. It tends to work well for longer events because Well, let me back up here. It does work well for longer events. The other type of person that it works very well for is somebody who has a very high base skill proficiency, high neuromuscular capacity, high muscular endurance capacity, relatively decent core strength, stability, mobility, etc. And it works well for them and for people who are targeting longer events because it follows the same reasoning put forth in the periodization argument. The closer you get to the event, the more like the event your training becomes. Now, your average reverse periodization plot has you doing more volume later on in those mesocycles, into that second mesocycle, maybe that third mesocycle. And because that training volume generally increases as the season progresses, this makes sense, right? Those of you who are in the northeast of the U.S. here, it's March 2nd right now. I'm recording this on March 2nd. It's pretty cold outside. If I pull up the thermometer on my computer here, it's 37 degrees. It's pretty cold. Now, I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people have not been outside doing 3, 4, and 5 hour zone 2 rides in snow, ice, and 30 degree temperatures. Okay? I do know that once the warm weather rolls around the middle of March or the 1st of April, people are going to get outside and start doing 30, 40, 50, 60 mile rides. An hour and a half goes to 2 hours, 2.5, 3, 4, 5, 6 hour rides. So training volume tends to increase during the season. You're going to be riding more miles. And in general, those miles tend to get harder as your fitness increases. However, they can only get so hard because you simply can't ride forever at those upper zones, that 5, 6, and 7 zone. It's just not possible. Okay? So reverse periodization tends to work for those longer events are the people who have that higher basic skill proficiency because they're able to build volume later on. Early on, they can build intensity. They can do a lot of work towards raising FTP, raising VO2 max, raising FTP, etc., etc. And then they can take that outside and build the endurance component afterwards. But I'll get into that a little bit more in a few minutes here. In terms of a practical application versus a laboratory type application, the muscular and energy demands of a really slow speed zone 2 type training that is characteristic of a periodization type concept are really incredibly different from that high speed, high intensity zone 5, 6, and 7 training type paradigm. And the expectation in that traditional periodization training plan is that you spend a lot of time doing that low speed, low intensity zone 2 training, and then suddenly you have to expect your body is going to reprogram itself and adapt to much higher intensity training. In that reverse periodization plan, your body doesn't have to deal with that sudden shock. So instead of spending 3 months doing zone 2 work and then suddenly bumping up to zone 5, 6, and 7 work, in a reverse periodization plan, your body's going to start by doing some zone 4 and 5 work, maybe a little zone 6, maybe a little zone 7. And then all it's going to have to do is take that zone 4, 5, 6, 7 fitness and stretch it out, add further zone 2 work as time goes on. But you still have that large platform of high intensity training. So when you go outside, when you start hitting those hills, when you start hitting those group rides, you don't get blown off the back. Maybe you're the one who's doing the blowing off the back. The only problem you might run into at that point is endurance. And that's easily built with those later outdoor rides. All right? Train to your goals, right? Train to your goals. So if your body does not require slow zone 2 training, if you're a crit racer and your body doesn't require slow zone 2 training, Why are you spending 3 months in the winter doing it? Should be spending 3 months in the winter doing some work in the gym, some core stability, some mobility, some zone four, zone five, zone six type efforts to raise your fitness ceiling, some zone four efforts to raise your functional threshold. And then as you move outside in the springtime, as you get closer to your races, you start adding some time, stretching out your rides a little bit, and then adding the aerobic component. Train to your goals, right? So, with all the science-y kind of stuff out of the way, what does a reverse periodization kind of look like? A good way to think about this, you could think about reverse periodization as looking a little bit like either an inverted pyramid or possibly a diamond shape. We talked about the inverted pyramid concept a number of episodes back when you're talking about the concept of muscular endurance as a huge base of your pyramid, or actually we talked about turning Friel's pyramid, 120 degrees on its side, I think it was. I had to pull out the math for a minute. It wasn't very difficult, actually. But a reverse periodization plan looks a little bit more like that inverted pyramid type thing. So instead of putting a lot of zone two on the base, we're flipping that sucker upside down. You're going to have less volume in the base phase and focusing instead on the quality of your work. Okay, and by quality of the work, we're talking about specifically targeting neuromuscular gains, muscular endurance type gains. Now, these are basically challenging your neuromuscular system, motor unit recruitment, muscle fiber recruitment, muscle fiber coordination and twitch coordination, time under tension, the ability for your nervous system and your muscles to handle heavy loads for a significant amount of time before they break down. Any of you who have gone out for like a 35-mile ride in February, and by mile 25, you find that your legs are starting to tighten up and cramp up, you're not working on the muscular endurance quite enough, and that's exactly the kind of work you should be doing during that base phase. And you should be doing that base phase work around your sweet spot. Why not? You know, get a little benefit out of it while you're there. The base phase of a reverse periodized plan should include some form of high-intensity work, essentially to raise that ceiling on your fitness, to raise your VO2 max ceiling. I talked about that, I think it was back in podcast number 66, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes right here. I'm going to make a note to myself to put a link in the show notes for this. And yeah, that was podcast number 66. High-intensity work, 1 day per week. You're probably going to be doing up to zone five. I wouldn't be doing a lot of zone six in your base phase, period. This is going to be short volume type stuff. One of my favorite sets of intervals for a base zone five workout is 6x3 or 9x3 even. The 3 minute VO2 intervals are pretty easy to handle, especially in that sort of less trained state. I'm not going to say untrained, because for the most part, nobody is untrained coming into a base phase unless they took 6 months off. Include within your base phase strength and stability training, core stability training, mobility training, the ability for your body to move throughout a range of motion and throughout the ranges of motion that cycling requires. That is a key component to base level fitness, and it's one that's neglected by most people, unfortunately. In your build phase, now we're skipping through from the base phase to that build phase, start increasing your volume, but continue to maintain some of that higher intensity work. Maybe you're going to add another day of high intensity work, and you're going to include some zone 6 and zone 7 type intervals in there. Again, train to your goals. Train like your goals, right? The theme here with that, train to your goals, right? Could be a new catchphrase, almost like mTOR was a while back. Throughout the build phase, it's absolutely, absolutely imperative that you continue to maintain fundamental capacity whilst you add intensity. I'm going to say that again for emphasis because it's that important. During that base phase, it is imperative that you continue maintaining fundamental capacity while adding intensity. That basically means you do not decide suddenly, I don't feel like doing my super spins today, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to do some VO2 max work instead. No, don't do that. I've seen so many people actually do that and screw themselves up. If you're trying to catch some VO2 max work, do it at a super spin intensity. Maintain that neuromuscular fundamental while you add some further training stress to your body. If you do not maintain those fundamentals, those neuromuscular fundamentals, those muscular endurance fundamentals, that core stability, that mobility, that muscular strength, you will lose it throughout the season. Remember, cycling in its nature is a catabolic sport. It is a sport where your body will have a fire sale on anything that does not help it go faster. That includes your core stability musculature. That includes the muscular volume that you have in your legs and your upper body that helps you control the bike and helps you put power to the pedals. It also includes that neuromuscular efficiency that you spent so much time building. Because once the season comes along, folks, let me tell you, most people do not spend a whole lot of time varying their cadences between 60 RPM and 130, 140, 150 RPM. Most people find that nice little sweet spot between like 85 and 95 or maybe 100, and that's where they do all of their riding. So they lose that range of cadences that they spent so long building. Don't be that guy. All right. Peak phases, race phases have an even higher intensity. Okay, and less volume than a build phase. All right, during that peak and race type levels, during that peak and race type phases, you're essentially going to see very little zone two work. If you're following my training plans and you're looking at my peak or peak plan or the race part of the phase, especially if you're looking at the bat and kill plan, you're going to see crazy intensity, but just a little bit of it. Just a little bit. Just the littlest bit. It doesn't need to be much. The purpose of a peak or race phase. Here's a little secret for you. The absolute purpose of a peak or race phase is to take your fitness, all right, and sharpen it. Sharpening fitness means letting your fatigue drop a little bit. All right, that lets you be fresh. When you're fresh, you can tap into fitness that you didn't know you had. The reason you didn't know you had it was because your body was too fatigued to access it. It's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but that's what it's there for. That's why a peak and a race phase is designed the way it is. High intensity, less volume, prevents a decline in fitness while allowing a decline in fatigue. Reverse periodization plan. Typically, you're combining the peak and the race phase into a single mesocycle, and I tend to think of that as one block. I tend to think of it as a single mesocycle because it really is that important. Your peak and race time really is absolutely that important. You cannot... And you, I repeat, you cannot fuck it up, okay? Because if you do, you will not perform. I guarantee that. And let me tell you, it takes a long time to get a peak and race phase, a peak and race mesocycle correct. Folks, I've been riding a bike for well more than 10 years. I've been racing for quite some time. I raced mountain bikes for a while. I raced road bikes. I raced mountain bikes again. I raced road bikes again. Be racing on the track. I've raced time trials. I've done a ton of racing. I have coached guys that have done a ton of racing. I've coached guys that have come in top 10 in the British Nationals, the age group British Nationals. I've coached guys that have won races. I've coached guys that have won stage races and have come in on podiums in stage races. I've coached guys to bat and kill podiums. And let me tell you, the number of times that I've had any client or myself get a peak correct, I'm going to say 10 to 15%. And the pure reason why is because it only comes from experience. And when I say getting a peak correct, I'm talking about every single thing drops into place perfectly. I'm talking about you got the perfect sleep. You got the perfect recovery. You had no stress in your extra cycling life. You know, the work and the kids and the family and stuff like that. There's no stress there. You had exactly the right workouts. You had exactly the right fitness coming into it. There's a lot that goes into a peak and a race mesocycle. It is probably one of the most important mesocycles that you can have, especially in a reverse periodization plan. Keep that in mind. Now, moving on one more time, the transition phase is the transition mesocycle is basically as needed, depending on your future goals. Are you going to peak again, or are you done for the season? In other words, after a whole lot of rambling and talking about volume and intensity and quality of work, that traditional periodization plan goes from volume to intensity. A reverse periodization plan goes from intensity to volume and intensity. Or volume plus intensity. You don't skimp on anything. You selectively apply a little bit of everything at different times to ensure that you get the absolute best result possible. So now, bottom line, that's what you're all waiting for, I know that. Periodization or reverse periodization? Which training plan works better for you? Well, if you've got a ton of time in the winter, maybe you work for yourself, maybe you live in a warmer climate, maybe you just took a lot of time off last year and your body's essentially just lacking that basic aerobic fitness that you tend to build up over multiple seasons. Maybe you took a couple years off riding. If any of those things explain you, or any of those seems those items describe you, you've got lots of time, or you don't mind riding in the cold, or you live in the warm weather, or, you know, you took a couple years off and you want to get back into competitive cycling, whether it's Grand Fondos or races or whatever. You just lack that aerobic fitness. Periodization worked fine for you. Let me give you a little example. Look at any pro cyclist. Their only job is to ride their bike. Periodization works perfectly for them. Get all your aerobic work done in the winter when you don't have to worry about time constraints and you don't have to worry about being at races and going from Girona to Milan or, you know, wherever. For those of us who don't have a lot of time, hell, I work three out of 4 weeks in February. I work 6 days a week. I'm burned out, man. It's killer. I know how you guys feel who work 50, 60, 70 hours a week. I appreciate it. I understand. That's why reverse periodization works well for you guys. You don't have a lot of time in the winter. You got a lot more time in the summer because it's daylight a lot longer. Don't have a lot of time. It's too cold. Or you're just doing a lot of long events this year. You're doing a lot of Grand Fondos. You're doing a lot of centuries. You're trying to podium in a Grand Fondo. Maybe you're trying to podium in a Grand Fondo in July. Reverse periodization work really, really well for you. Start your body out at that high intensity work. Get that training stress up with that limited amount of time that you have. Start building your fitness. Once you go outside, throw out a whole bunch of longer rides, do some zone two work, and catch your occasional intervals in between those. That's what reverse periodization is. Who else will it work well for? Let me tell you, it's going to work well for people who are working with a coach and have their fitness reevaluated at regular intervals. Because as I mentioned earlier before, reverse periodization is not simply a matter of intensity and volume. It's a matter of modulating those two factors and blending them, twisting them, shaking them up, and spitting them out into a pattern and a plan that will maintain your fitness, build your fitness, and set you up for success when your main goals come to roost. It's a perfect advertisement for what I do. It's worth pointing out that almost all of my plans are built on that reverse periodization concept. I tend to believe pretty much anybody needs to be doing some kind of high-intensity work during their winter time. Pretty much anybody needs to be doing core stability, core function, mobility, and strength work during the winter or base phase. And they need to be doing some kind of high-intensity work at that time as well. Otherwise, when they suddenly move to a build phase and start doing that higher-intensity work, they shock their body. And you know what? A lot of athletes that follow that traditional periodization-type plan, I see a lot of them get sick about that third, maybe fourth week of their build program. And the reason why is generally because their body's not used to what you're asking it to do. You're piling on the stress and your body's not ready to handle it. All right, so there's another tick in the reverse periodization column. Is one better than the other? Can't really say that. Is it situational? Absolutely. Depends on what your goals are. Depends on who you are. Depends on how long you've been riding. Depends on how much time you have. Depends on a ton of different things. So I encourage you, if you have questions, is a period, well, good, punch the mic too while I'm at it. I get so animated that I punch the mic. Is a periodized plan good for me? Is a reverse periodized plan good for me? If you have questions about what would probably work for you, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com. Post them on the Tailwind Coaching forums on the page on my website there, tailwind-coaching.com. Post them on the Facebook page. I'd be glad to answer those for you. And I'm sure there's a ton of other people that have similar questions. Shoot them to me on Twitter at CoachRobDC. It's anything you're looking for, I'd be willing to answer for you. Okay? I hope that sort of sheds a little bit of light on periodization, reverse periodization, why you would choose one over the other. And I hope it puts to rest a little bit of the discussion that came about after that last podcast. So, again, any questions, feel free to shoot them to me and I'll answer them to the best of my knowledge and to the best of my ability. Until then, until I talk to you the next time, keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down. Ride strong, ride fast, ride hard, and have an awesome, awesome spring. Well, maybe not spring yet, but it sure as hell looks like it's going to be in the 80s here soon. So, you know what I mean. I'll be talking to you all real soon.